And hello, listeners. Welcome to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH. I'm one of your hosts, Don Byrne. Delighted to be here with you today and joined, as always, by my friend and colleague and co-host, Andrea O'Brien. Hello, Andrea.
Hi, Don. And I am very happy to be here, too.
Very, very good. And for those of you who may be listening to Business IQ Radio for the first time, Andrea is the is a member of the Small Business Development Center, located her office is in Manchester, the university, and you can find her by going to nhsbdc.org. And the SBDC, well, why don't you take a moment and explain to the listeners who may be new to listening to us what the SBDC does.
Oh, thank you. Well, the SBDC is a technical assistance provider to small business. It's free, no cost. It is taxpayer funded, so somebody pays the bill, but not the user. It's available all over the state, and it's confidential. And you can meet one-on-one with a business advisor and talk about your small business, whether you have been up and operating for a few years or whether it's a startup. We know a lot of resources around the state, and we really love working with small businesses and making them stronger and more profitable.
And driving up their business IQ.
All the time.
Hence the name of the show. And I would tell listeners that there really are some excellent resources, and everything from short videos, tutorials, white papers, a lot of other resources listed on there, as well as a calendar of upcoming events that are really worth attending, and in many cases they're free or very low fee to attend.
I would say that our listening audience should like us on Facebook, like our Facebook page, and follow us, get notifications, and you'll find out about events going on all over the state. You'll be able to read important articles on business and hear from experts through blogs and just, you know, numerous ways that we post on our Facebook page. So tune into that.
And in that sense, you are a media outlet, and that's actually dovetails. How'd you like that transition? It dovetails into our guest for today, who is I would have to say she's a media mogul here in New Hampshire.
I think she is.
Okay. Can you tell our audience, give them a little preview of who we're going to be speaking to in just a few minutes?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Right now? You want me to say it right now?
Yes, please.
Okay. So our guest today is Heidi Copeland. She is the owner of Milliard Communications, and she's the publisher for Business New Hampshire Magazine, which is, I would say, one of the state's premier business publications. And it's one that I read regularly, and her whole group, her editor, Matt Mowry, does a great job preparing and presenting business information for the community.
And we're not trying to promote them as such, but they are co-sponsors with some other people of some other interesting events that come up periodically. I think 130 businesses will be attending an event that they're partially involved with.
Yeah, so one of I'd say the state's premier events for small business is the New Hampshire Business Expo, and I've been to it. Have you been to it, Don? Have you ever attended?
I have. I've walked through it, and I think it's usually held at the Radisson.
Yes, and this year it's held on March 24th through March 26th. And so if you don't have anything to do that weekend and you're just a regular person, go ahead and check out the best small businesses in New Hampshire.
And if you are a small business and you're interested in networking, it might be something you want to look into. So this will take us into a discussion that I think will be very interesting, dealing with what is it like to be a publisher in, you know, as we're here in the second decade of the 21st century. There's a lot of controversy around news, valid news, validating news, the role of the media. These are all things that we hope to explore with our guest, who is in the front lines.
It's education.
Yeah.
You know, I find that the articles are educational and really let me scope out what is going on around me in the business community.
Right. And so this is one of the numerous outlets that we have, and I'd also like to understand, what is the rest of the space, the ecosystem in which news and publications take place. Do you want to give a little bit of background on on our guest here?
So Heidi comes from a journalism background. She went to the University of Southern California, majored in journalism, and has been a journalist most of her life. In 2011, she purchased Business New Hampshire magazine and became the owner. And she's been at the magazine reporting for 12 years total. So we're lucky to have her today because I know she's super busy. She wears a lot of hats.
And I don't know if we'll have time to get into it today, but you're telling me she's also a dedicated dancer?
She is a fabulous dancer. And according to her, I've talked to her
now,
a little bit.
How do you know this?
Well, we're friends on Facebook. I will say that apparently there's a dance movement, a whole surge, maybe even an underground movement of dance in Manchester. And I love to dance. So I take an interest in that activity.
Well, maybe we'll get a chance to ask her about, you know, that, and if there's a business aspect to that. I'm always looking for ways to help people monetize their interests and activities, and maybe there's a way to do that.
I bet you're a good dancer.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I will admit to many things, but I will not admit to anything like that. So just before we have our guest, I would like to invite listeners, if you'd like to contact us, you can contact us here through the station, through the Facebook page of the station, Business IQ Radio. We're always interested in your thoughts about topics, interviews that we've done, what you like, what you don't like, how we can improve them, suggestions you might have for potential guests to come and spend time with us, features you'd like to see us pick up. We had we've done this a couple of times, and it's time for another one. We had a suggestion from a listener who said, gee, you know, technology plays such a key role in dealing with businesses. Can you do a little bit more on different technologies? And so we've done some things on the cloud computing. We've done things on business analytics. We've dealt with disaster recovery. Justin Cates down in works for the mayor down in Nashua, talking about all of these very interesting different kinds of topics. So if you do have something you'd like to suggest that we cover, please let us know.
And next week, our show is going to be on cybersecurity.
Right, and that'll be a technology-oriented show. So I think on that note, perhaps we'll invite our guest in here. I'll just tell you that you're listening to Business IQ Radio 105.1 WBNH. And on that note, I'll turn it over to Andrea to welcome our guest and introduce her.
Heidi Copeland, we are so happy to have you on the show. And as you just heard, listening audience, Heidi is the owner and publisher of Business New Hampshire magazine.
A fine publication, which I do read on a regular basis.
We you do a great job, and I hardly ever don't read it from cover to cover. And oftentimes actually some of our clients end up as stories. So it's really a fun publication that you submit.
In fact, in the past what we've done in the intros to the shows many times is we talk about upcoming activities, and yours is one of the sources for information we go to talk about what are events that are coming up. For example, you have the expo coming up at some point in time in the near future and things like that. So welcome to Business IQ Radio. We're delighted to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. It's nice to be here. So thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So we started out the show by trying to learn a little bit more about our guest, and so the show will be like all the others. We want to hear a little bit about your background, where you maybe cut your teeth in the business, publishing, or just journalism area, and how you ended up being owner and publisher of Business New Hampshire magazine.
Well, I started off as a newspaper reporter, went to University of Southern California, worked for the Burbank Daily Review right out of college. My passion is journalism, so I have been in journalism almost all my life. I took a brief hiatus as a freight broker. I ended up, I was working like many New Hampshire people in Boston, and we're actually writing about commuters and why they commute to Massachusetts and make more money in an upcoming issue. But I worked down there for years, and decided I wanted to see if there was something available in New Hampshire, met the publisher of Business New Hampshire, ended up working for him for five years.
Who was that?
Sean Mahoney in Portsmouth. So,
okay. So how old is the magazine? How long, many
the
years
magazine has been around for 34 years.
Wow.
So it has quite a history of covering business.
And did you study journalism coming up through school, or did you step into this from another area of study? Or
nope, out of high school, I got a degree in journalism. It's actually one of the few degrees back then that actually you walked out with tools to, you know, whether it was laying out a magazine or writing a headline, but you really walked out. It really should have been considered a tech degree because you learned everything to put together a newspaper, a radio show, or a TV show at the time.
Was it like we would see on those old movies in the 40s where, you know, it's, you're there and you're waiting for the phone call and there's been a murder, grab the photographer and you go down and you solve the crime?
Well, I take some offense when you talk about the 40s.
But well, I'm just thinking about what I watch on television, and that's more a reflection of my age than anyone else here.
Don's in the 40s. Is there a article or a story that you covered over, you know, prior to coming to Business New Hampshire magazine that stood out as a piece you were really proud of, or an expose, or some?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I probably, this really goes way back, but I got a huge piece published in the Los Angeles Times on wind energy, which interestingly now, fast forward many, many years later, is now finally coming to fruition. But it was being worked on in the 70s, and they knew that wind turbines could generate electricity. People just couldn't figure out kind of the economics of it and setting it up.
Wow. And you wrote that. And
I wrote that.
And they covered it. Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, energy continues to be a topic that I think is still trying to, you know, create some momentum. I feel like we're always trying to get over that hump where we should all be using wind energy or solar.
Right.
Heidi, may I ask, is it, I know there have been a lot of changes in the area of publication, and that term has really morphed into social media and internet activity, and I'm quite familiar that you have an internet presence. And have you found the need to diversify your business in different ways or different directions? Just curious in terms of how media companies, we're hearing it's difficult to survive in a print-only environment, and I'm guessing you as an expert in the publication area can give us some insight in that area.
Yeah, so I don't know any publisher that hasn't diversified and is still alive. And being creative is key, and also providing information that people cannot find anywhere else is key. But to the degree that we diversified online, we have 34,000 plus unique users every month reading the stories on our website. And so obviously there's a lot more information online than we can have possibly in print. We have an e-newsletter that goes out every week. We do a number of events. We sell all kinds of things we wouldn't have thought to even sell back 10 years ago. But yeah, you have to be very creative. And if somebody's got an idea in the office, just like any other small business in New Hampshire, we give it a shot.
So certainly one of the topics that's getting a lot of attention these days has to do with, can you trust the source of the information? How trustworthy is the information coming forward? Before we had the show, you were talking a little bit about, you know, bumper stickers are appearing on people's cars that are questioning the validity of the media, who once was looked upon as, you know, in a very heroic manner. As I said, there were movies made about the heroism and how they were the people who were going to, you know, get to the truth. Are there new challenges for validating and verifying the information that's coming forth that you have to deal with before you go to print on things?
Well, regardless of what you write, there are always times when a reader or two are going to write you and say, I don't like what you said. I don't agree with, I don't believe that that's true for whatever reason. Or, we're not flawless and we're certainly fallible, but journalists are out there to tell stories no one else is telling. 99% of the stories, even the journalist personally doesn't have an agenda. They're just looking to tell both sides of a story. And I think even though there was all of this brouhaha about fake news during the election, one of the things that they found, initially they came out and said that people, I think it was BuzzFeed came out and said people were much more likely to click on a fake news headline because it's intriguing. But then they did some follow-up studies, and now they know that even though people clicked on it, most of us are intelligent enough to figure out something about that doesn't sound right. It's a little too juicy to be true. So I think, you know, it's just like a lot of occupations go through getting a lot of dirt slammed on them. Take, for example, lawyers. But
that's an easy target. I hate to say it. Oh,
but
no.
if you go to court, are you not going to hire a lawyer to represent you? So the thing is, I think people are going to recognize that, you know, journalism has always been like the fourth branch of government. It's always been out there telling stories. They're not always good stories, and they're definitely not what people want to hear. But good luck in a world without journalists. Then you end up in a place like Russia.
So it seems as if if I'm reading into this a little bit, there's a difference in your mind between news reporting and journalism.
I consider all of it in the same bag. I actually would say there is news, and then there's reporting and journalism. But even we've been asked to do things in New Hampshire at Business New Hampshire magazine that we felt compromised our integrity, and we have to say no. And sometimes it's walking away from advertising. And I'll tell you, that's not easy in this world where print is possibly going away, to walk away from advertising. But we've always chosen to do what's right, and we think that's why we're still in business.
So over the years, I'm sure you've run across some pretty interesting stories. And I'm wondering how it is you develop your theme for the magazine, or is it that you're looking at business trends or timely news stories that will trigger that? Hey, let's do a piece on X, Y, or Z.
So all of us, we're all media consumers, and actually, as humans, we're really reading almost from the moment we get up till the moment we, you know, with our phones and social media, we're reading all day long. So we all come in with stories, and we're looking, for us at Business New Hampshire Magazine, we're looking for stories that have a New Hampshire angle, that have a business angle. So it might be a non-business story, but we're saying, is there a business angle to it? Or it might be something we heard about Wyoming and what they're doing, maybe, who knows, with the Affordable Care Act. And we'll say, well, is that happening here in New Hampshire? And what is it happening, and how does that affect business owners and managers? So I think one of my concerns with journalism is, as a whole, is that there are fewer and fewer journalists, and all of the big papers are cutting back and cutting back. But there are so many stories. And even in a small state of New Hampshire, where, 1.3 million people, there are so many great stories to tell. Mm-hmm. And we're not capable of telling them all. Mm-hmm. But there will never be a time when there aren't great stories to tell, mm-hmm. or interesting stories. They might not be stories that make you happy, but they're stories that need to be told.
Right.
So in the ecosystem of different sources of information, sort of what is your mission? Is it to be New Hampshire-based, focused on New Hampshire-based stories, or as you just gave an example, nationwide trends that are working their way into New Hampshire, or is it a mix of both? I'm trying to understand sort of where you see the magazine fitting among the plethora of different, you know, news outlets that are available.
Yeah, so we're definitely business news, but we really fulfill both of those things. So, for example, and we will reach out to programs in other states to see how New Hampshire stacks up. And that's something that we've evolved into only really in the past year. So Erica Cohen wrote about New Hampshire jails and recidivism. And one of the things in that story that she then talked to what other states are doing that's very progressive in terms of how they're preventing people in jail from ending up, you know, on this kind of endless cycle.
And did she tie that to business? Is that Or was that just kind of stepping slightly outside of the, I mean, it impacts the state greatly.
Right. And so we will cover a lot of issues because, and here's where business owners care about that, because business owners are very interested in what they're paying for taxes. Yes. So they're looking at, is it more expensive to just keep the guy in jail forever, or would I be better served by getting him out, you know, in a situation where he's not committing another crime or recommitting? So we look at a lot of things where it's there is a jail industry, and that's what we would call it.
Interesting, interesting. And it's so helpful because you're educating, you know, you're educating the general public on a topic that, you know, we may not be thinking of in that particular way. You're listening to WBNH 105.1 Bedford Community Radio, and our guest today is Heidi Copeland, publisher and owner of Business New Hampshire magazine. And so, you know, I consider when I read for education purposes. I want to learn something that I haven't seen before. And I'm reading to help my clients understand maybe crucial business topics or trends, or hear a story that they might benefit from. And I use this resource, I consider you a resource, to educate my clients. The other thing my clients need a lot of is networking. They don't know how to network, or they are new to the business area. And some of the events held around the state, you know, there are many, many events. I can point to a lot of organizations that hold these kinds of events, really help educate and connect the small business owner to either clients or strategic partners. You don't even know who you're going to meet yet when you go to some of these things. Can you talk about the importance of maybe some of the events held around the state and how you see it bringing value to the business community?
Yeah. So I in terms of networking, I think every business owner needs to be out there. You know, we live and die by sales. So a lot of business owners say, oh, you know, I don't want to deal with sales. I've got, you know, salespeople who do that. But the truth is, nobody feels as passionately about your business as you do. So I always encourage people to get out there. And and there's a lot of introverts out there networking. So if you're an introvert, the first thing I always suggest is find another introvert, and they may be standing alone. But connect with them. And, you know, here in New Hampshire, I keep saying this, but we're like 2 degrees of separation. There is some way that we are connected. So it usually doesn't take long to find that common thread. And then, you know, the other thing that we do is the Made in New Hampshire Expo, and it's a huge 3-day expo. And this is an opportunity for small businesses to go out, get wholesale accounts. If they have a product that they need to get into supermarkets, we invite all the supermarkets in. We have a list of about 1,000 distributors from all over the Northeast. But also, it's 130 small businesses. And we feel this is our commitment to helping New Hampshire's smallest mom-and-pop shops reach both a consumer audience and a wholesale audience. And, you know, Stonyfield came there for years until they outgrew it. And once in a while, they come back. Coca-Cola comes there because Coke and Moxie are made here in New Hampshire. So they come and you can squeeze the big machines. So it's everything from the really tiny business to some larger businesses, but the bulk are the small businesses.
By the way, when is that coming and where do you hold it?
It's March 24th, 25th, and 26th, and it's at the Radisson Expo Center in Manchester.
We've heard a lot in previous shows about some changes to the economy, especially, for example, in the western part of the state, that there are microbreweries popping up everywhere and that we're beginning to see actual wine growing. Who would ever thought that you'd be growing wine? And here in Bedford, we have a fine winery that has grown up. So I'm guessing that, you know, you're in the catbird seat to see these trends flow through as you look over the years, changes to the nature of the economy. Am I getting that right?
Yes. New Hampshire actually has 20-plus vineyards and wineries, and some of them actually import the grapes but make the wine here, and some of them actually grow the wine, like LaBelle Winery. They've got grapes, you know, on their hillside. So
But it took them a while to get those grapes going, so they initially started with importing.
Right. But wine is a huge industry. Beer is huge in New Hampshire. There are more and more microbreweries, and I forgot the number, but there's a huge number of microbreweries. And then mead is another thing, and hard cider is moving up. Moonlight Meadery now has a hard cider. I just heard through the SBDC there's a cidery in New Hampshire that's importing a special kind of berry from New Zealand. So the alcohol industry in New Hampshire is growing.
Where the winters are long right. and hard.
Well, the other thing that we've pointed out, and we've had shows in the past about this, is once you have a website, you're doing business worldwide. And we do have a wonderful resource in the Department of Commerce in Portsmouth that can actually help New Hampshire businesses find out how to do importing and exporting and get involved in that business. We've actually had guests on the show that have been the representatives from certain countries like Brazil, for example. How do you increase doing business with Brazil? And I know that periodically the governor runs different commissions to do this. So is this something you're seeing? Are you seeing us reach beyond our little state here and cross both state and national borders in terms of the nature of business flowing?
Yeah, we actually publish a lot of statistics about New Hampshire business in our annual July resource directory. But exporting in New Hampshire, it's pretty shocking how many businesses export here. It's huge. And a lot of companies, you know, depending on what you make, you pretty much have to import certain things to go into that product. So it's big here in New Hampshire and probably like it is anywhere. In fact, telecommunications, I think, is our number one or number two importer.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it that they telecommunications? That's very ubiquitous. You know,
well, it is right, but a lot of times it's parts for phones.
Oh.
So, yeah. I mean, New Hampshire has such a diverse and fascinating economy. There's a company in Laconia that makes automation for doors and entries, store entries. And this company, I think it's Orion, I can't remember the exact name of the company, but they're actually doing, Amazon has its one brick and mortar store out in Washington state. And they did the security for that. And it's for Amazon employees that they can walk into this store, pick up whatever they want. There's sensors and cameras everywhere. They don't go through a checkout. They walk out. They put what they want into a bag, walk out, and they're automatically debited from their account for what they purchased.
Oh.
And a company in New Hampshire does the ingress and egress for that store.
I saw that story on the news. And so they do the actual mechanics or also the technology. Is it embedded in the technology? Is the technology embedded in the mechanical
probably RFID
arms?
Or something like that?
Yeah.
I
don't know all the details how their doors work. In fact, we're going to be writing about them because I just heard the story, but I was like, that is great.
That's yeah.
So you bring up a very interesting topic, privacy, with a lot of concern in terms of businesses and people giving information, and also cybersecurity. Are these topics that you're seeing are of interest to your readership these days?
Well, it's funny because people think cybersecurity, I'm on my computer and it's the internet. But cybersecurity affects every aspect and small of what a business does, whether it's somebody hacking your HR files or your data files or, you know, your website. We had our website crash 2 weeks ago. And I belong to a CEO peer-to-peer group, and two people in that group had somebody, you know, that spam that's going around that you have a USPS package has a shipping problem, and they had an employee click on it.
Mm.
And one guy was back up in 48 hours for about the cost of $5,000, but another guy, it took him a week, and they lost a lot more data. And it cost them $20,000. If you're a small business, those are the type of things that could put you out of business. So cybersecurity is huge for business owners. And small business owners, because they don't have the financial wherewithal to have all of the protections, are a target. So mm-hmm. we do write about that.
So because being forearmed forewarned is forearmed.
Right.
You know, if you know about it, you can talk to your employees. We're actually, our next week's show is on cybersecurity.
Oh, right? Perfect. Yeah.
You know, Andrea's begun investing in bitcoins so she can deal with the ransomware.
I cannot figure out bitcoins. You can explain it to me all day long.
The blockchain. It's all about the blockchain.
I don't even, talk about the that. Dark matter, right?
Right. No, it's something different,
dark
but sure.
Space. Okay.
So as we look at the state, I'm guessing, you know, just as someone here in the southern part of the state, I see the southern part of the state being sort of more industrialized and tied really very closely to the kind of economy we see in Massachusetts. And then as I think about the North Country, I'm thinking more hospitality, but there seems to be a revival going on. We've had a show we've done about what's going on in Franklin, and we understand that there are a bunch of things going on in Littleton, and there's activity up at the Balsams. And so do you have any insights you can share with us in terms of how the state is developing, how we're doing?
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge in the North Country. I mean, with losing especially like around the Berlin area, losing those mills. But there are, when you get really far north, there are companies that are coming over in Canada and manufacturing here. And we've written stories about a lot of those businesses and what's going on. In Littleton, they've had an urban renewal. The downtown is absolutely gorgeous, and there's great shops and cafes and things going on. There's an organization up there, the North Country Council.
NCIC.
Yes. Right.
North Country Investment Council, I think.
But they've done a lot to revitalize, not just Littleton, but several communities, and making broad. One of the big hurdles there is the lack of broadband. So they've worked on bringing broadband to people. You know, it's hard to have a home business if you can't get high speed internet, and so and Franklin too. Franklin, like a lot of New Hampshire, has really been confronting the drug issues. And I think that's been a challenge for some employers there to actually find employees that can pass the drug test. But there's certainly a lot of growth and development going on there.
Yeah, Franklin is undergoing revitalization, and a couple of guys up there have taken the town, along with town officials, kind of under their wing, and have really worked hard to, redo the beautiful mill buildings. I mean, they have such a great infrastructure of buildings and the river. It's a nice place to recreate.
Yeah, all these natural resources. And it's a good example of the public-private partnership that has to really exist. I mean, we've seen that in terms of Manchester sort of reinventing itself. Nashua, I think, cracked that equation a while ago, and they do quite well because there really was a collaborative between the government. How do you find the state as a place for people to do business? Are we a business-friendly state from your perspective?
Well, there are probably a lot of business owners that would disagree with me, but I actually think we are. And I just think that, you can come in, like Craig Benson used to say when he moved up from Massachusetts, you can make a call and actually talk to the governor here. That doesn't happen very often. I was at the Manchester Young Professional Network launch to their startup challenge, and I was talking to Senator Shaheen there. So you can't live in a lot of states where those people, I talked to Governor Sununu a week ago, where you can run into these people at an event, shake their hand, and have a 3-minute conversation that's one-on-one. That's a real New Hampshire advantage. Our challenge is going to be we've got to get young people to stay, work, and play here. And I think one of the challenges we face is that you can go to Massachusetts and take a pretty sizable increase in income. And I think New Hampshire employers, we've got to figure out something here. Why is it that we can't pay what they can get across the border? And we're actually looking at that issue in the April issue, I think it is.
It wouldn't hurt to have a train that came right into Manchester.
So many businesses, it's been a real source of frustration. Dyne, as a matter of fact, was a big advocate for rail. But they really felt like if you can get people getting on a train and coming north for that, that ultimately they will buy a home and live here, that they want to be closer to work. But having that access, and if they do that and they've still got family in the Boston area, just being able to go back down. But it's unsustainable. I was visiting a friend at Mass General yesterday. That commute at 3 o'clock in the afternoon is not sustainable.
And it's getting that commute is getting less and less predictable.
Right.
You know, even when you think, oh, I'll just be down there in an hour, you get to that bridge and or, you know, the overpass, whatever it is. And you could be sitting there for 20 minutes.
Right.
You can't tell. Yeah. So a train, I think, would. I mean, New Hampshire has such a great quality of life. Manchester is such a cool little city. It's great to live there. But you want to be able to, I think young people want to have a little more action. I mean, whatever that means. But, you know, a bigger selection of places to go and things to do. And a train would let them access that all that much quicker.
You know, you touched on something in passing before that I want to pick up on. At one time in the not distant past, our top five representatives were women, governor and our four representatives to Congress, both Senate and we still have a good representation of women. And you're a woman CEO here in the business environment. Do you find it challenging as a woman to run a business here in New Hampshire?
I do not find it challenging to run a business as a woman. But I think women in general, and certainly I have faced challenges that other people don't. There's, you know, any woman out there knows what it's like to be, you know, now they call it mansplaining, but somebody to be patronizing. I sit on a lot of boards, and I'm often surprised how a 30-year-old guy, I'll ask a question, somebody will answer it, we're moving on. And then three other men in the room have to explain it to me. So, yeah, I mean, there are things that happen and you just kind of say, okay, yeah, there goes another one. There goes another one. But yeah, I mean, but I think there's a lot of women business owners. But New Hampshire is behind the curve nationwide in terms of how many business owners we have. So I do think we need to be helpful. And I know actually Hollis McGuire from the SBDC is starting an investment group for women to invest in women startups. And I think that could be huge.
We're actually talking about trying to get that as a platform or program. Coming up, it's exciting. I think they're looking to put together this fund. There's so much money that, you know, it has to be an accredited investor, but they want it to be all women. And so if you're listening and you have any interest, get in touch with the SBDC, Hollis McGuire.
Through you if they want to.
Yeah, they can go to our website and find our contact information.
Right.
But that's very, you know, that's exciting. And Julie Glossner from our office is on the board of that fund. They're forming it now. So
it's interesting that you say that, that we're behind, because as I think about, we've had some shows on here with people from the different business incubators. Not a lot of women entrepreneurs starting companies come to mind as I think about having walked through the Alpha Loft or out at the Hannah Grimes Center in Keene. But there are more and more women engineers, but they just don't seem to be. We don't seem to have a representation. I mean, you're 52% of the population. We should be close to even numbers, and we're not seeing anything like that. Have you seen it? Is there a trend, or do you think it's holding steady? Is there change in the wind?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we were almost 5 years ago for Business New Hampshire magazine. I think we were like 51% men readers and 49% women, and it's actually dropped over the last couple of years. Now, I suspect what happened in 2008, a lot of those women businesses maybe closed up, or I mean, there's been a lot of attrition in the last, you know, since that recession. But we definitely see the women business owners and vice presidents decreasing in terms of our readership. So, yeah.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that, including the fact that oftentimes women are still the primary caregivers at home, and so they're taking on really more than another full-time job.
You know, that
to be dealt with.
That reminds me of the article, it was at Atlantic Monthly, where there was someone who wrote an article. She used to work for the president as an advisor, and she had a daughter, and it was very hard to balance it all. She wrote this article in frustration in that she couldn't do it all, and her family was calling her back, so she gave up her position and went back to her home and her career that she left as a full-time tenured professor at Princeton. So, you know, it's all relative, saying you can't have it all, because
right.
What about that is not having it all? But see, women want to be able to do every, you know, participate fully. And yet, as mothers and wives and sisters and everything else, I think very much a part of us is tied to those roles.
The other thing, so we host the Best Companies to Work For competition in New Hampshire. And one of the things businesses really need to see the value of is that a fully engaged employee is going to deliver so much more bang for the buck. But in order to be fully engaged, that may mean for both men and women, if the school calls and they're closed or the heat's not on or the kid is sick or got a fever, that they've got to leave and have that flexibility. And I think businesses need to recognize, you know, New Hampshire, I think we still don't have mandatory sick time, and we should, because it's really heart-wrenching for, especially if you're a single mom, like to have everybody shunning you because you've got to leave to go get your kid. And nobody wants to live if feeling ashamed of just being a human being. So I think bringing humanism to the workplace benefits everyone. Somebody recently said to me, another CEO, well, you know, at his employees work like 10 to 6. And he said at 10 of 6, you know, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., but at 10 of 6, he's got three women, 20-somethings that want to turn around and have a conversation. And I thought, who wants to live in a world where we can't have a conversation with our coworkers? But to that, I would say a couple of things. Most of us, when our common thing is work, our conversations often go back to that. An idea could come from that. And the other thing is, we're in the workplace where we have really strong friendships, we will stay much longer. So they may not make as much money, but if they like the people that they're working with and they feel connected, they will stay there much longer. And you're much better served than that person leaves because they're frustrated and now you're training somebody else for 6 months to 18 months. So I'm right, really passionate about
that. It's that dip in productivity as you try to get over the learning curve. You're throwing away all the knowledge and experience
right.
of the people. My daughter-in-law lives in Canada. And they have a program where she just had a child and she gets up to a year of support off. Now, she does it as a percentage of whatever her previous salary was. So it's still sort of tough to make ends meet. But there is time there for both the husband and the wife to be able to deal with the issue of childcare. And we're recording the show for our listeners who may be listening on the podcast. In the latter half of February in 2017, it was just a very terrible story about a child in, I think it was Nashua, that was at an unlicensed daycare that was found and died. And the lack of infrastructure in place in terms of childcare and other services in general, because now everyone has elder care, childcare, pet care considerations, are really some of the criticisms that as a state, I think, we get. I think they're deserved and they deserve to be looked at, but sometimes it's tough to get the legislature to take their moves. But it gets back to that public-private partnership we were talking about before.
And companies who understand that a valued employee, you know, they're going to go the extra mile to make sure that they keep their employees happy.
Yeah, you've made that investment. And by the way, you're listening to 105.1 WBNH, and this is Business IQ Radio with Heidi Copeland, the publisher and owner of New Hampshire Business Magazine. And I interrupted you there, Andrea. I apologize.
That's okay. I was just going to say that the magazine does highlight best companies to work for. And I find that read very good and interesting, and that these companies take very good care of their employees. And it's probably what makes them such strong companies.
Now, Heidi, I don't know if you know this, but we are sitting among a sustainability expert. Andrea is the sustainability expert for the SBDC in the state. And actually, when we began our conversation, you were talking about wind power as one of the first stories that you you covered. What's going on in terms of interest in the topic of sustainability and even especially green energy? Are you, this a trend that you see? Is this something that businesses are recognizing as being an important topic these days?
Well, it's interesting because, for example, to install solar means that a lot of businesses have to own the building. And so that gets a little tricky. But I think businesses are always interested if it can make them more cost effective or they can save money. I think we do write about sustainability and we do write about energy trends, and solar panels on roofs are more and more common, but they're still not everywhere. And Eversource, of course, has voiced some concerns. If everybody has solar panels, who's paying for the infrastructure? So there are some hurdles that we're going to have to face.
Right. On the other hand, they don't want to build another coal-burning plant because that'll take them 50 years minimal to get an ROI on something like that.
Well, and of course, there's hardly any coal being used, I think, now anyway, because it's all natural gas. But yeah,
right, right. Good correction.
Oh, my goodness. I was going to say that south of the border, Massachusetts, they seem to have more incentive programs that make solar an easy decision for people.
As well as wind and some of the other technologies. I mean, here in Bedford, we are exploring heat pumps. We just, in the parking lot for our library, we buried some heat pumps under there. We're going to be harvesting energy that way in an effort to control the cost of running the library. And as I remember, I don't know the numbers exactly, but the payback was on the order of 5 or 6 years. I mean, it just made great sense to do this. Plus, it was supported with a grant that really gets you over that initiative. The CapEx versus the OpEx issue is the big one that we all have to learn how to deal with in terms of looking at these and trying to get that return quick enough. Because, as you said, small businesses, cash is king. It is everywhere, but especially in small business. And to tell somebody, gee, why don't you make this investment in doing these things and you'll get a payback in the next 16 years.
Not going to be there appealing. In 16 years.
I just want to say it's funny because when you talk about payback and the return on investment, or just talk about the payback period, but business owners, it's always funny to me if I were going, you know, it's a lot cheaper, for example, to subscribe to a 3-year subscription. But most business owners subscribe for 1 year. So I don't know if that's a lack of confidence for the future. Right. And I just heard today from Bloomberg that business confidence is at an all-time high in the U.S., which makes me a little nervous because then it almost sounds like a bubble. But
well, there's no place to go, right?
Right.
Well, everybody's waiting for a tax cut down to 15% from 35%. We probably won't see quite that, and we'll see if it'll be interesting to see it at all.
This conversation reminds me of an event I went to recently that Business New Hampshire Magazine sponsored, and it was the forecasting event, and it was one of the best business events I've ever been to. It was 5 minutes from a...
Why didn't you bring me along with you?
I tried.
Okay. No, were adult beverages served? I would have been
there. It was early in the morning.
No, it was 7:30 in the morning.
That's why I didn't bring you because... No. But it was truly one of the best events I'd ever attended. And I got so much out of it. I came back. I wrote up the notes. I shared it with our entire staff.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and the people that, and I saw it on Facebook, people really liked it. And it gave a slice of, you know, 10 to 12 different topics from healthcare to energy to what's going on in banking and real estate. And I'm leaving people out, but I'm looking forward to that next year.
And we do that every January, so.
Well, it caught my eye this year for some reason, and I recommend that everyone check out the forecasting event.
Terrific. You actually touched on another subject in passing, the opioid problem here in the state. We just did a show with two gentlemen who've started a business to train businesses on how to recognize and deal with opioid crisis in their workplace and the associated problems that go with it, violence in the workplace, petty theft, many things like this that are happening. And we got into a little bit of the controversy around legalization of marijuana. Do you see this as a topic that's going to be people are saying that, I know, I think it was in Massachusetts, this is a potential very big business in terms of hiring people. Would you like to forecast there a little bit, look into your crystal ball and give us a sense of how you think that might develop?
Well, New Hampshire has, so it's medicinal marijuana, right? Only, not recreational. Not recreational. And I knew three of the four spots were open, but they've limited it to four, which doesn't make a lot of sense. It is going to be huge. Massachusetts, I believe, is decriminalizing it. Maine is decriminalizing it. So the trend, it was one of the few areas of discussion that Republicans and Democrats have agreed on, that legalizing marijuana, majorities in both parties, was the way to go. Now, I did actually just hear on the way over here that there's something going on in the White House to possibly reverse that. That could be very tricky, because as long as it's still against federal law, first of all, you can't have intrastate trafficking, but also then taxing the banking. Colorado has gone through a lot of challenges with the banking because you can't run it through federally regulated banks. The cash that comes as a result of the industry. So I think it's a fascinating industry. 29 states have had some, are somewhere on the spectrum in legalization. I think it's inevitable. Our prisons are full. We can't fill the prisons anymore. That's the real crux of the matter. Nobody wants to pay to put these young kids in prison for 5, 10, 15 years for marijuana infractions. So I think we're on the path. I think even if this administration says, they want to, that they're going to enforce drug laws, the truth is drug laws, we've been fighting the drug war for 40 years. It doesn't work. So even if they want to do that, it's a blip on the progression toward total legalization. Mm. Whether you like it or not, I think we're on the way.
So I want to put you on the spot a little bit. Where do you get your news from? What do you listen to and read?
Oh, well, I'm very excited to tell you where I get my news. So, I'm a public radio listener. I have a 2-hour commute every day. So,
and hopefully now a 105.1.
And 105.1. And I drive through Bedford every day on my commute. And then there is a new news show every night at 7:30 on HBO. It's Vice News, and it is fascinating. It has totally taken nightly network news and flipped it on its head. There's no talking head. They use graphics in between the stories. It really plays with your brain that to have a news show that's different, but if you give it 2 to 3 weeks, you will be hooked. And they are covering stories that nobody else is covering all over the world. Some politics, some of the other stuff, but they're really telling, they've got these brilliant young reporters in places that I think, I would never do that, like in drug cart, going into these interview these guys at drug cartels in Mexico. And your heart is just racing, but they're going in there and doing the interviews, and it is fascinating. Wow. And then, I'm a reader, so, I love the Atlantic. I love New York Times. Yeah.
You don't just rely on Jon Stewart.
I get all my news from Jon Stewart.
I actually don't watch Jon Stewart. He's not even on
anymore.
Yeah. Okay, so that's why I never did, though. Yeah.
What about, I'm always getting these push notifications from the Washington. I don't even sign up for these publications, but
I sign you up for them all.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I'm getting them, and they're in the middle of the day. It's very tempting to It's right there on the phone. Do you refer to your device?
I follow the rabbit hole.
I do not. I am actually, and people complain that if they call my cell phone, they don't get me. I talk on my cell phone if I need to have a conversation on my commute in the way in and on the way home. I actually don't look at it most of the day because I feel like I got to get stuff done. And I'm very suspect of social media.
I don't look at my mail. I'm just saying, like, if I go from meeting to meeting.
She's not cheating.
No, but I'm thinking I should get a push notification from Business New Hampshire Magazine.
Oh, yeah. Well,
maybe.
So what is a...
I'm on that.
What is a day in the work life of a publisher and owner of a magazine like? What you're mentioning, you get to work and sounds like you're fully engrossed till the end of the day. What is it? Can you give us some insight into what a typical day is?
Well, I love my job. And here's why I love my job. I love my job because of diversity. So I come in and I could be editing a story, brainstorming with the editorial team. We could be having a circulation issue where we need to find 200 prospects to add to the circulation list. We could be working on an event. So I'm with the events team, or we're brainstorming how to create a new event or freshen up an old event. So, and of course, I have to do the typical things like the, you know, sign checks and approve checks and that kind of stuff. But I find that I am in at least 5 or 6 departments all day. And people always say when they even call my office, like, which office are you in today? So depending on what needs to be done, I'm doing it. And that's, for me, that's the only reason way I could do it.
And you have a great editor.
Yeah. Everybody loves Matt.
Yeah. Matt's good.
So we're coming to the end of the show here. I have 2 questions and Angie may have some others, but try to get to them quickly. If someone wanted a career in journalism these days, any advice?
Oh, absolutely. If you've got a bent toward writing, journalism, sometimes it's telling great stories, but sometimes it's telling people what they need to hear, but you've got to write it in a way that's compelling. So you've got to be a writer, and you've got to be open to talking to people, because you're not going to learn anything if you're not out there talking to people in that job and listening.
and that'll change in some sense as well, because you also have to have it sounds like more and more of a stage presence, because we're moving into a multimedia world away from just the print world.
Right. But they're not talking off the cuff, even if it's online or, you know, whatever it is, even on television or wherever, video, they know what they're going to say. And it's, yeah.
And what do you see for the future of New Hampshire business?
34 more years.
Very, very good. If someone wanted to contact you or reach the magazine, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, so certainly they can email me or go to our website.
Don't call you, though.
BusinessNHMagazine.com. They can call me. I always say to people, I get 300 to 500 emails a day. I only get...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I only get 3 voicemails. So voicemail, at least, I'll get back to you more quickly.
Oh, very good. Very, very good. And your website, I'm sorry, did you give us your website?
BusinessNHMagazine.com.
Very good.
I did have a question about the editorials that come in and how you handle them. I mean, are there a lot of editorials, not editorials, but letters to the editor?
Oh, we love letters to the editor. We're often sad that people write us great letters, but they don't want them to appear in print, because we will print good, bad, or indifferent. We will print anything that you write. So please write us, comment, complain. It helps us plan for the future. And if you've got a story idea, please pitch us with a story idea.
Well, right after we sign off, Don and I are going to do that.
Okay.
And that brings us to the end of our show. Heidi, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to talk to our audience today.
Thank you so much.
It's been very interesting. And what we do here at this point is we turn the show over to Andrea, who will close us out and take us to our sign-off capability. So over to you, partner.
Okay. Well, like usual, guys, remember, You can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.